Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Wednesday night. Yes, believe it or not, it is Wednesday night. Yes, I've had shows all week. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and this should be the first night of our weekly shows, but we did shows on Monday and Tuesday night. By Saturday night, I should be thoroughly exhausted. That was Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars, and there's a line in the song that I absolutely adore. It's called If You Don't Believe Me, Just Watch. And the reason that I love that is because there's been so many people in my life that have said, Yvonne, you can't. You're not good enough. You don't know enough. You're not smart enough. You're a female. You're this, you're that. You're too short. You're too old. Well, if you don't believe me, just watch. And the reason I say that is because this radio show was a 5-year dream. Some people didn't believe it would happen. Others, you'll get tired of it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, because this is your show, it is the show of the guests, it is the show of the listeners, because of each and every one of you, this morning, we are at 80,444 listeners just on the show. We are well on our way to 85,000 listeners just on the show. And Australia, my hat is off to you. You are 96% of our listening base, and I love you for it. I love you so much that I promote your homegrown boys, the Teskey Brothers, who are a blues band who should be on the corner of Bourbon Street instead of in Australia, because they sound just like Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Otis Redding, Johnny Lang, and Robert Johnson all rolled up in a nice tight package. I love these guys. If you haven't heard them, you need to go and look them up and buy their music because they are absolutely fabulous. Now, that being said, mark your calendars for January the 5th at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the reason I say that is on the Investigation Discovery Channel, there is a show that will be on called Married with Secrets. I will be on that show. It is about Gerard Schaefer, who was Florida's first serial killer before Bundy and before Danny Rollins. And we talk about Schaefer and his secrets, and we talk about the victims that are in my book, Silent Scream, which is the true crime that Schaefer committed against between 9 and 34 young women between 1969 and 1972. So if you haven't bought the book, buy the book first so you will understand what's going on that show. His wife did not know what he was doing, and neither did his boss, who was the Martin County Sheriff down here in South Florida. So remember that, January the 5th at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Now, if for whatever reason you're too shy to come on the show, which I don't know why anybody would be too shy, because it's a fun show, and everybody that, even first-timers that come on here, when they leave, they say, oh, I had so much fun, I want to do it again. But if you're too shy, too busy, whatever, or if you live in an international country, if you live in another country, because it's very difficult for me to interview people that are from another country. One, the time difference, and B, the cost. But if you want your product to be talked about, go on to advertisecast.com, look up Off the Chain. All of my pricing is there, and I am so reasonable, it should be against the law. I will run your ad for a solid month with every show that I have within that month, no matter if I have 4 shows a week or 6 shows a week, I will run your ad for you. It can either be an audio or it can be, I can read it. All you do is send me one you say. I will take care of it for you. So again, advertisecast.com. In the search engine, look up Off the Chain, and all the pricing is there. I'm from $6 to $100. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. So, now that we've done our housekeeping, tonight we have a guest. Bless her heart, has been waiting so patiently, I think since June, to be on this show. That's how far in advance I book my shows. Right now we are booked up through the end of May and part of June for 2018. Yes, people sometimes can't appear for whatever reason, but for the most part, when someone says, Yvonne, I'm going to be on your show, they are on the show. So This guest has been waiting so patiently. I'm so excited she's on the show. Number one, she lives in a part of the country that I absolutely love. Number two, she's from a city that I would just drool to be able to spend 6 months in. And number three, part of the year she lives on a houseboat in the bayou, which is a dream come true. Arthur, I cannot talk tonight, ladies and gentlemen, And I'll tell you why. The computer that I have for my studio, it crashed. So I brought in my computer I write on, and it didn't want to pull up the show. So Brenda was trying to call in. I was trying to get the show set up. So it's been that kind of day. But anyway, author Brenda Hunt has written all of her life. She was an only child, so for the first 15 years of her life, she learned storytelling. It could keep her and her friends entertained. And all through her nursing career, stories continued to pop in her head. And I bet you Miss Brenda would have some stories being in nursing for as long as she had been. She has dozens of story ideas filed away for later use. But it was only near the end of her nursing career and retirement was on the horizon that she picked up her writing again and began to devote her time and energy into this new adventure. And she says, an adventure it has been. Welcome, Brenda. Thank you for being so patient with me while I was trying to get this silly show up.
Well, I'm glad to be on at last. It sounds good.
See, the other night I had to cancel a show with Colin Martin because Blog Talk had, I don't know, I guess they went on hiatus or something. So now I got to figure out a time and place to get Colin back on. But I am so glad that you are here with me tonight. Now, you are fairly new in the indie publishing industry. But before we talk about that, let's talk about you. Let's talk about how you got first into your nursing career and then back into writing. So let's go back to the beginning. When you were little, did you always want to be a nurse?
No, not really. I always wrote and always had stories, you know, and I even thought about going into English education when I graduated. But a good friend of mine talked me into going to nursing school with her. And the funny thing is, she dropped out, and I continued on.
Oh, no. So
yes.
What year, and I know Southern ladies aren't, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Brenda lives in Louisiana, and she's born in New Orleans, and part of the year she lives on the bayous, Terrebonne Bayous, and I've read about Terrebonne Bayous in many, many books, some of them by a very good author, James Burke. Talks about the Terrebonne Bayous. But until we talk about bayous, what year did you graduate from high school and then go straight into nursing school?
I don't know. I always felt like serving with people and dealing with people. I always enjoyed helping people out, and it just happened to go that way.
So what year did you start this particular journey?
I graduated from high school in 69, and I graduated from nursing in 71.
So you graduated the same year I did. That was a long time ago. That was, oh, God, that was a lifetime ago. All right. So
yes, it was.
You started nursing itself in 71, and you were in that field for how many years?
I was in that field for 42 years before I retired.
During that time, a lot changed within the medical industry. Did not. You were talking before the show that IV bags were not always plastic IV bags. They were something else.
Yes, we did IVs out of glass bottles.
And
you hung up a glass bottle.
And those things would break at the drop of a hat.
Oh, yes, because most of the floors were really hard floors, and they would break in a second. We also did shots. Well, some of our injections were what we call the Tuvix, where you put injection into the metal canister, and then you had to take those metal canisters and put them in an autoclave and sterilize them to use them again.
Yes, I remember those. I remember because they were also in doctor's offices.
Yeah.
And now you just give a shot and toss it away. I do that every day with my husband. When you were in nursing, did you specialize or Were you in the hospital? Were you in a doctor's office? Or was it a mixture?
I started off in labor and delivery. And, in fact, I delivered my first baby by myself on Christmas morning. The doctor did not arrive. And so I wound up delivering my first baby.
What kind of impact did that leave on you? I mean, here you are, probably a brand-new nurse.
Yes.
In a hospital with probably a brand-new mama. This is probably her first baby.
Yes. Well, it was both of our first for a lot of things there. Everything went fine. As long as everything went okay, that was fine with me.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What a way to get indoctrinated into L&D is just deliver a baby by yourself.
Yeah, and this is on Christmas morning. So this was, to me, it was a Christmas miracle.
Oh, my word. So you got out of nursing for a little while to raise children and make sure they had what they needed. When you went back into nursing, how different was it?
It was a big difference. It was a change in a lot of things. Pay was especially a big change to me. But a lot of things had become more disposable by the time I went back in. I used a lot of some of the techniques were still the same, but some of them had changed some. But I had a good background and a good background knowledge, so it didn't really be that. It wasn't really that hard for me.
Do you use those years in nursing? Because we talked also about the fact that the last few years of your nursing was in-home health care. And
yes.
Would you agree that being able for an elderly person or even a young person who is disabled or sick, they get along better and are healthier than if you stick them in a hospital for days on end?
Yes. I firmly believe that patients do better at home than they do in a hospital. You got to realize hospitals have a lot of germs in them. So you just putting yourself into a situation where it's more germs and more things available that you can catch.
I always say you go to a hospital to die because of the germs and sometimes of the uneducated guesswork that goes on because not everybody's a cookie cutter. I mean, so John Doe can take 6 milligrams of Coumadin, but Susie Q can only take 3, and you're trying to give her 6, and you kill her because she has a brain bleed.
Yep. You have to be very careful out of this stuff.
And you have to listen to the caregivers and to the family when they're saying, look, this is not normal. This is what they take. This is what my husband or my wife takes. This is how they take it. And you can't poo-poo that because they live with that person. They know what's going on with that person.
Yeah, and that's one of the things with home health a lot of times. We were there to help set that up and help with the caregivers. And a lot of times we depended a lot on the caregivers for the information that we needed.
And that's true. That's true. In fact, when my husband was released from the hospital a couple of years, well, 5 or 6 years now, they got this bright idea to send two people in. They were going to send in a PT person and a home health care person because they thought he had congestive heart failure. And bless her heart, the home health care person, she number one, she didn't know anything about my husband. And number two, she didn't understand his illnesses. And number three, she didn't know how diabetics reacted to certain things. And I'm going, oh, my God, you're sending this woman. Please don't come back. I live with this man. I know I've been looking after him a long time. Just go away.
My husband and I were this afternoon saying that when we go to the hospital or something like that, I would never tell him that I was a nurse, you know, in the very beginning. But it got to the point toward the end that I would walk in and tell him, look, I'm a nurse, And I would get a different attitude, and I would get a different, looking, you know, when
you'd
I went in.
You get a different respect. You would get a different respect.
Yes, a different respect. As though, you know, when I'm saying something, what I'm saying, I know what I'm talking about. It's not like, you know, I don't know, you know, the medical field. If you tell me what you're talking about, then I can understand it. You know, don't give me this little low education kind of explanation. You know, you can go into detail with me. I know what's going on.
Don't be giving me your canned speech, because I've been around that block too many times. You're going to talk to me on a peer level, and I'm going to tell you what you're going to do.
Yeah, pretty much. And I had to do that. My mom and dad, my dad got really sick for about 6 months, in and out of the hospital, in and out of ICU. And the ICU nurses over there got to know me very well.
I understand that. Now, let's jump over to my favorite city, New Orleans. You were born in New Orleans. How long did you live there?
I've never lived in New Orleans. I was born there. I was born at Charity Hospital. But I always lived about 50 miles south of New Orleans.
But I'm sure you've been there.
Oh, I've been there all the time. We usually go at least 4 or 5 times a year at the least.
So would it be safe to say that New Orleans has its own heartbeat?
Yes. Oh, yes. There's a lot to go with New Orleans.
And the history, oh my goodness, the history is so rich and so filled with magic and mystery and voodoo and all the things that people respect but yet are slightly afraid of, because they don't know if they want to believe in it or not. They're afraid not to, but they're afraid to. It tickles me because they don't understand it.
Just because my last name is Hunt, it's because I'm married to someone whose family is from Oklahoma. But my maiden name is Plaisance, which is as pure Cajun as you can get.
It is. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, we were talking about Southerners, and Brenda says, I'm a born and bred Louisiana Cajun. I know exactly what you're talking about. So that would explain to people that don't understand. Part of the year, ladies and gentlemen, Brenda and her husband live on acreage and a house. But the other part of the year, they live on the Terrebonne Bayou. It's natural love to get out of your heritage. It's in your genes.
No. Oh, it is. I'm a water person. I love on the water. And being on the bayou like that has been like one of my dreams come true, is being able to sit there. It is actually a 2-bedroom house that was on land, and they built a barge and put the house on this barge.
Wow.
Yes.
So when you go, and I know they have two pugs, ladies and gentlemen, two little pugs. That's what you heard in the background. And do the pugs like the houseboat?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they do. They like traveling with us. They have traveled with us wherever we went. I used to have 3. Our old lady passed away a couple of years ago. But I have her daughter, and one of her daughters and one of her granddaughters. That is Maggie and Lily. And like I said, they travel with us wherever we go. I have a pillow that I put in my lap on the front seat of the truck, and they have that place where each one goes on what side, and they are fine wherever we go.
They're like little children. They each have their own preferred place to lay down.
Yes, they do.
So,
and
let's
last
talk about-
year, what?
Go ahead. Finish what you were going to say.
I said last year we were gone for 10 and a half weeks through the western states with our camper. And they traveled with us.
Wow. Now, when you're on your houseboat on the bayou, set the stage, because I know there are folks out there that are going, but a bayou is nothing but a swamp, gators and moss and snakes. That's not necessarily the entire picture.
No, actually, the houseboat is pretty much in town, in our town, our hometown of Houma. In fact, it sits behind the warehouse and the shipyard my husband owns. And actually, there is a bar across the bayou from us that a lot of times on Saturday nights, we'd sit on the deck of the houseboat and listen to the music coming in from the bar across the bayou.
Oh, my goodness. So you can actually fish off of your houseboat. You can catch supper or breakfast.
Yes, we can fish off of it. We do have a couple of alligators that we do see from occasion. I have named them Alphonse and Gaston. So we do see those from time to time.
And speaking of the gators, because now I live in Florida, and in the gator population is like the person population. You've got three gators for every person. But gators, as a rule, are very shy animals. They're not aggressive unless it's mating season.
Right.
And then they get a little cranky.
Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they pretty much left us alone. They'll go swimming, you know, past the houseboat and go swimming, you know. A couple of times they've come onto the land and sun themselves. But that's usually right in early, early spring, like when they've just come out of hibernation and they just want to bake up their skin and get their skin really hard. My husband used to, before we were married, my husband used to hunt alligators.
Wow.
That's how they, for their hunting lease, when they go hunting in the winter times of duck and geese and other things.
And anyone that hasn't had gator meat, it has its own flavor. And
yes.
Sometimes you have to acquire a taste for it. Now, I've eaten gator bites, and I can eat a few of them, but after a time, they get kind of chewy. So,
okay. We put alligator a lot of times. It's fried alligator, and a lot of times we make what we call a sauce piquant, which is a tomato type of a tomato gravy that we cook it in, and we serve it over rice.
Good. Sounds good.
Yes, it is good.
Now, you've gone from nursing for 42 years, and I'm sure if you chose to, you could write lots of stories about things that happened in the hospital.
Oh, yes. There's several funny stories I could tell. I don't know how good they would come across, but there's several funny of them.
You live on, for all intents and purposes, you live on the bayou. And then you turn around and you write historical romance. How in the world did you get around to writing his? And I'm not talking, ladies and gentlemen, about historical romance in New Orleans or in Louisiana. This girl goes to England and Scotland, and where do you get these ideas, and what possessed you to write historical romance?
Historical romance is always what I've read, and so I guess that's why I went to that. The first book, Soft Sweet Fire, was actually written 40 years ago.
Really?
Yes, and I picked it up. I sent it to an agent, and nothing came about it. You know, way back then, unless you had, you know, an agent and everything else, that really wouldn't even look at you.
That's
so
true.
I wound up picking it up, sticking it in the bottom drawer of my secretary, and, you know, really didn't think anything more about it. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe not even like quite that long, I found it while I was cleaning out my secretary, and I said I decided I was going to play with it again. And that's what I did. I rewrote it, and added stuff to it and changed things around. And that's when I did some research on indie publishing and decided to go that way.
So when did you publish that book?
That book was published 3 years ago.
So in the indie world, you are what we would call a newbie.
Yeah.
When I published my first book, it was in 2007. And in the indie world, of us that published with, not together, but we got burned by a vanity press publisher. And once we got burned, we all banded together and formed our own little group of people. And we published ourselves. We published indie.
Uh-huh.
And it has taken a long time for us in the indie world to get respected. When you published your book as an indie author, how hard was it for you to get out there and to get recognized?
Actually, it's still very hard. I'm still trying to, you know, get recognized and still trying to push it. I guess I'm not very good at the advertising part of it. I'm more good at the writing part of it. And I think that's, as an indie, you need to do both. You need to be able to advertise yourself as well. And I'm just really beginning to find out that that's a push I need to do.
Yes, as an indie author, and this is the more, for lack of a better phrase, Brenda, this is the trap that a lot of indie authors fall into. They're great writers. They put out beautiful work, but then they don't know how to market it. Fortunately, I've been doing marketing since I was old enough to pick up a pencil because my mother had me working for my father before I ever started school. So I've been marketing all of my life. And when I published my first book, I went out and embraced the internet. I got on every social media network I could. I got on Twitter. I got on Tumblr. I got on MySpace. I got on God. It was there. I did it. I put my website and I started out there, and to say that I didn't get rejected would be a lie, because yeah, I did. Some people would say, you know, we still don't recognize you, go back where you came from. But I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and that is, as an indie author, is what you have to do. Because I have something that I say at the end of the show. It says, if you want to achieve greatness, stop asking permission. And I think a lot of us indie authors have been asking permission, and we don't have to ask permission anymore. We just go out and do it.
Yep, I'm finding that out now. Like I said, I'm learning quite a bit as I go. Making mistakes, but sometimes I feel that's the only way you're going to learn is by making mistakes and learning that this is going to work, so you're going to have to try something else.
And even making a mistake is not wrong. It's not a failure.
No.
It's a learning experience that you can take and say, okay, well, that didn't work. However, if I do this minus that, that will work.
I have found that locally I'm getting better known locally, but it's I need to branch out. I need to get a little bit more outside of my little space.
Yeah, you need to get out of your comfort zones. And that's another challenge that we as indie authors have, because we already feel like, okay, we're not traditionally published, so the world hates us anyway. So why would we want to put ourselves out there? Well, if we don't put ourselves out there, then nobody's going to know we're out there. And nobody's going to see us. And we won't be able to sell our products. So, yeah, we got to put us, the brand, out there and say, okay, here I am. Take me or not, I don't really care, but here I am. Because I guarantee there's a market for what you write, a huge market.
I know. I have to be a little bit more pushy. I'm not too much. As a personal, I'm not very pushy. As a nurse, I was quite pushy. And I guess I got to bring that nurse pushiness into my writing pushiness now.
There you go. That's what you got to do. You got to go back to those skills you learned in the medical field of being pushy and being firm and being assured of yourself, because you've got what it takes. You really do. I was reading some of your excerpts, and they're amazing. People will know, because you know there's another Brenda Hunt out there that is also an author that's not you.
Yes, I know that. Someone told me about that.
And when I was doing my deep dive on you today, every time I'd type an author, Brenda Hunt, it would pop her up. I'd say, that's not the one I want. So I would have to go back and put the name of your books in, and then it would pop up. So we got to figure out how to get you out there, so when they put in author Brenda Hunt, it's not the other one, because we don't want them buying her books. We want them to buy your books.
Yeah, I know. I think I might have to distinguish myself and maybe go by with my middle initial like I usually do. I may have
to separate
myself.
That, because she just kept popping up, and I'm going, that's not who I'm looking for. So, ladies and gentlemen, the first book that Brenda put out, she's got what she's called the Moonstone Magic series. And
right. That started off as a short story.
The Soft Secret Fire?
Soft Sweet Fire was my first book. Like I said, that's the one I wrote
about.
Tell us about that one. This one I wrote about 40 years ago. You got to realize, at the age of 23, my first husband was killed in an industrial accident, leaving me with a 5-month-old and a 17-month-old.
Oh, my Lord.
And Soft Sweet Fire, became my escape. This was my world, where I could create and make my characters do what I wanted to, and make my world, you know, even though things happen, come out as a happily ever after. And so that's how that one came about. It is from, let's see, I have it right here. My nephew is the one that brought this to my attention. My heroine's name is Brenna, which is very close to Brenda.
Yeah.
And I said, I never really thought of it that way. This is the name I picked out for this character because of the names I was looking at. And he's the one, he says, you know, he says, ain't Bren. He says, you know, you got kind of close to yourself in there. And I said, well, maybe I did. But,
it was like a catharsis, I'm sure.
It was some, like I said, this was my world I could escape to get away from the world that I was living in at the time, because the world I was living in was not very good at that time. This was my high school sweetheart I had married.
The thing is, you came out on the other side of that dark tunnel. I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine the pain and the hurt and the anger and the angst and the grief that you went through at that young age. And to put it all in this book, anybody that reads this book now will have a different perspective on it.
Mm-hmm. But I was very fortunate in a lot of ways too. About 8 years later, my best friend decided she was going to try to set me up with one of her husband's coworkers, and I was by all means I was not ready. I was not going to do this. I got my life into some semblance of order and that kind of stuff, and the day before Mardi Gras, she calls me up and she says, we're going to Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And I'm going, who's the we you talking about? And she says her and her husband. And she mentions this guy. And I'm going, no, I don't think so. For one, I don't have anybody to babysit the kids. And da-da-da. And I came up with every excuse. Now, this is my best friend since I was about 5 years old. She says, no. She says, I've already contacted your mom. She says, you go and sleep over there tonight. The kids are staying with her. We're picking you up in the morning.
Wow.
Well, this was my blind date. 2 years later, we were married, and we have been married now for almost 35 years in April.
What a beautiful story, Brenda. So the moral of this story is you can find a second first love.
You can find a second first love. You can. He's a very good guy. He adopted my first two children, raised them as his own, and we had two more girls together. And all together, between the four of them, we now have 14 grandbabies.
Oh, my stars and garters. That sounds like our household. We have, I forget how many grandchildren we have, 16 or 17. I can't remember. There's so many. We have five great-grandchildren. I can't
well,
keep
I
up.
I don't have any great-grandchildren yet. My oldest grandchild is 17, and my youngest just made a year last month. Last week,
wow.
I think that.
Wow.
So, yeah, and we are all going to be together at my daughter's house this Saturday for an early Christmas. So it ought to be amazing.
And fun, and a lot of people, and a lot of good Cajun food, I bet.
Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes.
Now, let's talk about the second one, the Snowbound Fairy Christmas. How did this one come about?
How did that one come about? This one came about, it was supposed to be a short story, but took a life of its own. My granddaughter, I was babysitting her around Christmas time because her mother works at a bank, and they were off from school, and she wanted me to take a nap with her. She was tired. So I laid down with her and took a nap, and when I woke up, this little storyline was in my head, and I thought, well, I'm just going to write a little short story about it, and it pretty much took on a life of its own.
Tell the folks a little bit about it.
Dulcie, who was my heroine, is considered by a lot of people a witch because she has the ability of precognition, which means you can touch people or see things into the future. And also I kind of put a little bit of medical things in there that she can use some of the herbs and things around to make her own medicines. So instead of telling the little girl that she rescues, the little five-year-old that she rescues, that she's a witch, she says that the fairies have given her this power and have taught her how to do these things. And that's kind of how that went.
And then there's a good look at a hero that rescues them from the snowbound hut.
He rescues them, and he's kind of falls for her. But she doesn't. He's an earl. No, he's a baron. I take that back. And she doesn't feel that she is worthy enough for him because he's a noble, and she's just a plain old witch. But along the line, there's a letter that surfaces that kind of explains some things. So I'll let you read about what happens after the letter.
Now, that book took place in England, I'm going to surmise.
Yes, that one took place in England. And because she has precognition, one of the characters in there, he comes to help him out. It's a friend of the hero. His name is Worth. And she touches him and she tells him that there's a redhead that's going to lead him on a merry chase. And then that's how book two came about. That becomes Worth's story and his redhead and the merry chase that she leads him on. And that's called In Pursuit of a Scottish Lady.
And that one takes place in Scotland, correct?
That one takes place in Scotland.
Give us a little bit of the backstory of that one.
Our heroine, Lilaeus, has lost just about everything. So she decides to go into highway robbery. And the one she robs is Worth. He's a duke. And she robs him one night. And he is not to be denied. So he follows her and tracks her down and realizes what's going on. But instead of telling her he's a duke, he just plays like he's a common soldier, you know, that's just looking for a place to stay. And he winds up helping her out. But while he's helping her out, she winds up being kidnapped by her uncle and brought back to London. So when he goes to London to rescue her, all of a sudden now he's got to tell her that he is a duke.
And that causes quite a stir.
Yes, it does, because now she's believed he's lied to her all this time.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive.
Uh-huh. And he's been chasing her. He chases her to Scotland. He chases her back to London. And there's still some more chasing to go around.
And hence the prediction of a redhead would lead him on a merry chase.
Yep. And that's his merry. And then the third one that's coming out in February is The Marquis and the American Heiress. And this is a friend of Worth's who helps him in London rescue his lady. And now Lyndon has to rescue his American heiress.
She shows up in London?
She shows up in London, and he's supposed to escort her and try to keep her out of trouble. Because you know us Americans, we're not about to follow the rules of London society.
Oh, no. We're not that proper.
No. In fact, the first time he takes her out, he takes her to a place called Tattersall's to buy a horse. And she winds up buying one of the ones that has the worst reputation over there. And she gentles him right there and climbs aboard him, straddles him, and rides him around.
Oh,
instead of doing the light saddle, you know, and a proper English lady.
Yes. She rides Western style.
Yep, that's Western style. She's not about to be a proper little English lady.
So when will this book come out?
I am shooting for February. I've got about 3 chapters left to write, but with the holidays, it's been kind of iffy. I had a daughter that also brought a new house. So for about 3 weeks, we were helping her move. So by the time I get home at 10 o'clock at night, I was exhausted and not ready to write anything.
I truly understand that. It took all of the energy you had to just fall into bed.
Yes.
So
she went from... Yes, ma'am.
She went from one bedroom to 3?
Well, not quite, but about a 1,200, 1,300 square foot house to almost a 3,000 square foot house.
Oh, my Lord.
You
get lost in that place.
Yes, it is beautiful. She and her husband well deserve it. They have been working very hard.
So let's get back to your American heiress. What comes after that? Do you have something else in the pipe that is going to play off of that, or is that the end of the series?
That's the end of the series, but I do have something. I am going to try a modern-day book, a mystery, a romance mystery. It is a book I wrote in high school, very naive reading over it now, but it wasn't too bad. It's got a very good storyline. And but I have a very dark twist to it for the end.
You would not believe how many people that I've interviewed that say they have all these stories that they wrote when they were younger that they would never publish. And what I say to them is what I'm going to say to you. Kudos to you for having the courage to take that story out of the mothballs and bring it up to snuff for this time in your life and putting it out there, because some of the best stories that we miss are the stories that are never put out there.
All right. And like I said, I wrote this in high school. I think I was probably a junior in high school when I wrote this. But like I said, it had a good storyline. And all my friends that read it, of course, in high school, anytime I wrote anything, it had to be passed around at my school. And a lot of my friends would read it. And when I told them that I was rewriting it and putting it out there again, they were there, oh, I want it, I want it, I want it. So hopefully this one will do well too.
And does this have a working title or a title of sorts so that we can be watching for it?
Right. The title I had back in high school was Tomorrow's Child. I'm not sure whether I will keep it or not, but it's a working title.
Sounds interesting just by the title. Sounds very. But, now, what I am waiting for, Brenda, is for you to do either a romance, historical romance set in the bayous, because
I have one working on that. That is my side. It's going to be a trilogy, but I don't want to put it out until I have all three books ready to put out. The first one is going to start with her in England, and then she's going to inherit a plantation on the bayou, and she's going to come around, and it's going to be during the War of 1812 with the Battle of New Orleans.
Ooh.
In fact, I went for the anniversary, 2 years ago?
Uh-huh.
The 200th anniversary or so of the Battle of New Orleans. I went and watched it. They had all the English, the British soldiers encamped here, and the American soldiers encamped here, and they had their battle and all of this stuff. So I was able to watch that and talk with some of them and get some feedback on that.
Now, what I wanted to know, did they, you know, if it hadn't have been for Jean Lafitte,
right,
Andrew Jackson would not have won that battle. So I'm wondering, in that battle, did they bring in Jean Lafitte and show what he did to save New Orleans?
Oh, yes. They had Jean Lafitte in there. They had Dominique Yu. In fact, the book is going to kind of incorporate Dominique Yu and Marie Laveau.
You sound right up my alley, because I am the one I'm working on right now is called The Hero of New Orleans, Jean Lafitte, and it's got Marie Laveau and Lafitte in it. Now, in my diggings, I found out that Marie met Lafitte when she was 14, and she may probably have never met him again. But in my book, they have this thing going on. There's children from this thing.
Well, the hero in here is going to be a privateer, but he's been in and out of New Orleans, and he's been in and out of the Caribbean, because the third book is going to take place on an island in the Caribbean.
Ooh, I can't wait!
And the plantation I am kind of featuring in this book is a plantation my dad grew up on. It's called the Gaines Plantation. And I have pictures of the house and all of this kind of stuff that I really want to use as part of my cover. But my dad grew up on this plantation. His dad was a sharecropper. And it's kind of a tribute to him that I'm using that plantation.
Well, I can't wait for you to get that trilogy out.
It's in the works. It's in the works. But like I said, I don't want to put it out until I can put like the first book out, and then 2 or 3 months later put the second, and 2 or 3 months later put the third, because I don't want people waiting a year or a year and a half to catch the second one and a year and a half to catch the third one, because it's going to be a continuation where one ends the other one's going to begin. It's going to be a to be continued kind of thing.
Ooh, like George R.R. Martin in Game of Thrones.
Yes, yes.
You're not going to believe this, Miss Brenda, but we are getting towards the end of our show.
Oh, really? That fast? It does go fast.
I told you you'd be saying that. Yes, ma'am, we are getting to the end of our show. And before we run out of time, please tell the folks where you can be found so that they can look you up and go and get your books.
I am on Amazon. Just look up for Soft Sweet Fire, Snowbound Fairy Christmas, and In Pursuit of a Scottish Lady. You can find me on Amazon or CreateSpace. I'm on both places, and both on paperback and on Kindle. I'm also on Kindle
Unlimited.
Uh-huh.
Right. She's also on Facebook, ladies and gentlemen, and y'all hook up with her on Facebook because we're going to see more of her. And if she's willing, I want to bring her back next year and see where she is and how many more books she's got now. Would you be willing to come back?
I will be more than willing to come back. This has been fun.
Good. I'm glad you, because we're heard in over 70 countries now. Did you know that?
Yes, I read that. That is fabulous.
So you will get a following as you come on this show more and more. And I see you going places, my friend. I see you, because there is a huge market for historical romances and romance in general. And I don't want you to hang up when the show goes dark, because I have some things to tell you. But I am going to say thank you so much for spending an hour with me. It was quite a bit of fun.
Yes, I truly enjoyed it. It was fun.
I so much appreciate you taking time out of your life to, especially this time of year, which I call the silly season, to spend hour and talking about things that are important to both of us. Now, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, I think tomorrow's Thursday. Yes, tomorrow's Thursday night. My guest will be author Wayne Zarrell. He's been on before. He's got a new book out. On Friday night, author Violet Howe will be with us. And on Saturday night, blogger Donna Antonio will be with us. And you might want to hook up with her, Brenda, if you haven't. Bloggers in the indie world are very, very much needed. They are a necessity in our world, and Donna will tell us why. And y'all all know at the end of the show, there's several things I say. And one of them is don't just feel special. Be special, because if you just feel special, ladies and gentlemen, you'll never be special. You have to understand that you are special. If you want to achieve greatness in your life, stop asking permission, because nobody's going to give it to you. And the difference between who you are today and who you want to be tomorrow is what you do today. So if you are tired of the person you are today, then change what you do so you can be the different person tomorrow. And it can be done, ladies and gentlemen. Trust me, it can be done. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that is your trademark. People will forget your name. They even will forget what you look like. They'll forget what you're wearing. They will even forget what perfume you have on, or cologne you have on, or the color of your eyes, but they will never, ever, ever forget the way you made them feel. If you made them feel like dirt under your feet, they won't forget it. If you made them feel like that they were the best thing since sliced bread, trust me, they won't forget it. They will remember it forever. So when you're out and about in this silly, silly, silly season where people buy too much, spend too much money for things that people don't need nor appreciate, and you find yourself getting grumpier and grumpier, and you find the people you come across are getting grumpier and grumpier, kind. It doesn't take a whole lot to be kind. You'll be better off for it, and so will they. So with that being said, I want to thank Brenda again for joining us. I can't wait to bring her back, because I know she's going to have some more interesting stories for us, as well as books that she has released. Go on Facebook and look up Brenda Hunt, author. When you go on Amazon, don't look her up under her name, but look her up under Soft Sweet Fire, Snowbound Fairy Christmas, and In Pursuit of a Scottish Lady under books. That way she'll come up. So until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, when we join you again, this is Yvonne Mason with Off the Chain and author Brenda Hunt saying good evening.
Good night.
Okay, now we're off the air, but whatever we say will be heard in archives. That's the fun of archives because it's like the outtakes in a movie. But what I'm going to do is the show will go up into archives, and when it does, I will put the link on my page and tag you in it. This is my gift to you. You take that and you spread it everywhere. Tomorrow, I will put it up on podcast.com, Podcast Garden, SoundCloud, MixCloud, and Spreaker. I will tag you in those links as well. And you put it everywhere, Brenda, so people will hear about you. It also shows up automatically on Stitcher, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and YouTube. And when I put the taglines in the podcast, your name is put in there, author Brenda Hunt. And so, and I'm, because there's two of you, I'm also going to put in one of the names of one of the books so that people will know this is the right Brenda Hunt.
All right.
I want you to take those and I want you to spread them everywhere so people can hear this show, because I think it is so important that people hear you. You talk about your books, talk about your journey, talk about your profession, talk about how you got here, and get you the exposure that you deserve.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, my darling, and I will get with you and see if we can't get you on one of the June shows.
Okay.
A couple of books should be out. And until then, you have a wonderful, wonderful silly season.
It's going to be very, very silly, I have a feeling, Saturday, because we will be all of us together for the first time in about 4 years. It's going to be very interesting.
It will be. It will be. And stay in touch with me. Anything that you want to post on my page, feel free to post it on my page. Post your books on my page so people can see them.
All right. I will do that.
And get yourself that exposure and get that website put up so that when we bring you back on, the website will be up and we can point people to your website because people want to know more about you.
Okay. I will have, like I said, my son's coming in. He's my IT guy. And he said he was going to help me. And like I said, it was supposed to be done in September. But you know how Harvey set everything back and all of this. They managed to survive pretty good. They didn't get any damage, but we couldn't get over there. And so it was difficult.
Well, I'm glad they made it okay, and I'm glad that he lived to fight another day so he can get your website up. I'm going to let you go and get off this phone so I can get this up for you and get you tagged in it. And thank you, my dear one, for coming on this show.
And thank you for having me. And you have a very merry, merry Christmas.
You too, sweetheart. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.